and from listeners like you, who donate at wjffradio.org.
Welcome to the Local Edition, news and information keeping you connected in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. Coming up, we'll be talking about the national banking news that's been causing some market jitters the past week or so. And we'll do that not just by checking in with James B. Huntington, but also we'll check him in the Honesdale National Bank. First, it's time for the latest news from Liam Mayo of the River Reporter. Liam, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me back.
So let's start off. There was a Bethel Town Board meeting, and what was this about? And there was a petition too, right?
Yeah. So it's a petition that was circulating in the weeks before the Town Board meeting last Wednesday. It had a little under 1,200 signatures going into the board meeting. I just checked right before the program, and it still has a little under 1,200, although a few more people have signed since then. And this petition is making three general categories of requests. It's asking for the planning board and the zoning board to broadcast their meetings through Zoom or through other online means. It's asking the town to put more resources in the building department, partially through ensuring more full-time staff. And it's asking the town to put all of the documents for sort of development projects online.
Do you think it's going to get any traction?
Yeah, so far it's gotten some traction. The meeting last Wednesday sort of went really well, I thought, in that there was a lot of good discussion, a lot of seeming openness from the town board. Of note, the town board itself is already very transparent in that it broadcasts its meetings via Zoom and puts a lot of its information online. This is more about the planning board and the zoning board and the building department. But a couple of things have already started to happen. Since that meeting, Daniel Sturm announced that all of the documents for a project to create a hotel where there had been the White Lake Mansion, all of the documents for that are now online, with online documents being sort of the go-to going forward. This was one of the projects that kind of inspired this petition.
Oh.
So having those documents online is a good first step. According to reports from the Sullivan County Democrat, Sturm said the plan was to hire one new part or full-time employee in the building department. And the one sort of request from the petition that may be a harder sell is the one that has less town board involvement. Due to the way the open meetings law is set up, as far as I come understand it, each board in a town gets to make its own decision about whether it broadcasts its meetings via Zoom. So the town board has chosen to put its meetings out via Zoom, but the planning board and the zoning board of appeals have both decided against it, and decided, I know at least in the planning board's case, unanimously against it. There were representatives from both boards at that meeting, and it did seem like both boards were at least going to reconsider their positions on the issue. But advocates were really pushing the town board to either mandate this or just express in the strongest terms that the other board should do it. And the town board was pushing back against that and saying, hey, this is the one thing we can't do. We can't overstep our bounds and impose something on the planning and the zoning boards.
Well, it's interesting that it came back around to the White Lake Mansion, because when I heard Bethel town board meeting and petition, I thought it was going to primarily be about that White Lake Mansion. And in some ways it was. But it sounds like the petitioners made it about more than just the general transparency of local governance. So thank you for that. Now,
just to say that you were right about that. The White Lake Mansion project is the project that people were really interested in the town of Bethel. And that is the impetus for this petition right now, the people accessing the documents for the White Lake Mansion project. I think where the petition got broader is that even if the White Lake Mansion project is the one that people care about right now, it's not going to be the only development project in Bethel. There was another one last year, the Besides Cabins project, where this also came up and was sort of the earlier impetus for this petition. So it's broader because this will keep happening, where there will be projects that people care about.
People want to know what's going on. Speaking of, I've heard that there's going to be a program where asylum seekers to the U.S. could live at SUNY Sullivan, receive workforce training through a partnership with the Center for Discovery. And I've been hearing about this. We haven't said much about it on air yet. I'm hoping that you can tell us, what do we know about the program, where it came from, and where it's going to?
Yeah. So the program, Mayor Eric Adams announced of New York City, announced this program last week. There was a conference and a press statement on March 7th. And there were sort of a range of strategies he announced to try and get a handle on the crisis of the volume of asylum seekers arriving in New York City. One of the programs mentioned in those announcements was a pilot program with the Center for Discovery and SUNY Sullivan. Around 100 asylum seekers would have the opportunity to live at the SUNY Sullivan campus and receive workforce training. That workforce training would, in ways, have them be working at the Center for Discovery. Now, I've reached out to the Center for Discovery to sort of ask for clarification on this, and the representative I reached said that the announcement was a little bit premature. No contract has yet been signed with the city, so it was kind of announced as a settled thing when it's really not yet. But it is something that a lot of people have had concerns about since the announcement, and it's something the Sullivan County Legislature has been talking about since the announcement as well.
Oh, what have they been saying?
They had a discussion about it at Thursday's last Thursday's legislature meeting, and the following day, the county government put out a press release saying that they'd met with officials from SUNY Sullivan and the Center for Discovery, that they were in close contact with sort of all parties involved, and they tried to settle kind of a few concerns people might have about it. According to Sullivan County Legislature Chairman Rob Daugherty, those participating in the program will be vetted carefully, including by the FBI, so there will be, like, safety. So that's kind of speaking to the potential safety concerns people may be concerned about. There will be preference given to people who have a medical background or have already completed post-secondary courses. So it's, in one sense, housing these people at SUNY Sullivan, and in another sense, giving the Center for Discovery a workforce to assist with sort of its clients.
Okay, well, and thanks for the update on that. Now, finally, one of the things we wanted to check in is on the Pennsylvania side of our listening area. Governor Josh Shapiro's first budget was introduced earlier this week. What are some of the things that are in there that we should know about it, and have there been any local reactions?
Yeah. So when Governor Shapiro announced his budget, one of the things he tried to paint it as was a, quote, common sense budget. So a more, maybe practical, maybe scaled back budget compared to his predecessor, who, according to our reporting, had much bolder spending proposals. There were a couple of specific things that we'd like to point out. There was a proposal to increase the senior property tax rebate, or specifically to raise the income threshold for that rebate program from $35,000 to $45,000 a year. There was investment in a program to connect universities and businesses for job growth. One of the bolder-ish things was $567 million for education funding. It's kind of been a ongoing issue how much education funding is provided from the state in Pennsylvania. Education advocates sort of looked at this number and said, hey, this isn't really enough. But it's also a fairly large number by itself. And I think notably, as any like hint of bipartisan discussion is always notable in this climate, Republicans sort of across the board gave a measured response. They sort of viewed the budget as a, quote, good start. They thought the governor said a lot of things that they could get on board with. Obviously, there's a lot of work to be done from their perspective to get it in a passable state. But there seemed to be openness to consider at least a lot of the priorities. And that was the focus of local Senator Lisa Baker, who had her own statement about the budget. And she focused on the fact that Shapiro identified several priority issues, quote, that are important to residents of the 20th Senatorial District, helping individuals and families keep more of their hard-earned money, creating workforce development and job opportunities, safe communities, and a couple of other things. So the priorities that Shapiro and the Republicans in government had seemed to be aligned in a large sense, and there was just to be discussion about the numbers and the finances.
All right. Well, I thank you for giving I thank you for giving us that update. I'll remind the listener that over here on the New York side of the river, April 1st is the budget deadline, and we've had a lot of budget news out of Albany as people are hustling to try to get their projects and issues covered in the upcoming budget. So I thank you for giving us that update on what's happening in Pennsylvania, because I haven't been following that as closely. And I want to thank you as always for joining us, Liam. Thank you so much for these updates.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, hey, are you going to be on the Reporters Roundtable?
I believe I will, yes.
Okay.
And, if I could take a moment. Sure. Have a moment quick?
Yeah, real quick.
We just wanted to shout out River Roundtable. We're holding an event. The River Reporter is this Saturday, 3 to 5 p.m. in Highland at the Highland Senior Center, talking about changes in the community. So you can visit our website for more information.
All right. Liam Mayo from the River Reporter, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
This is the Local Edition. We're going to move right along now to our next story. And that river, that Reporters Roundtable is coming up on next Saturday, March 25th, just so you know, on Radio Chatskill, Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Now, in other news, we're getting ready for our economic update on Work Shift Live. Of course, stocks tumbled today as fears grew that the banking turmoil sparked by recent collapse of a couple of U.S. banks will widen and spread globally. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell roughly 280 points. And the S&P 500 fell about 0.7%, markets have reeled since the twin failures of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank in New York City forced U.S. regulators to take emergency measures on Sunday to protect deposits at both of those lenders. But the government's attempt to restore confidence in the banking sector has yet to work, as some investors remain deeply worried about the financial health of other banks. How are local banking customers feeling, and what should they know? Radio Catskills' Tim Bruno spoke with Kate Bryan, Chief Financial Officer at Honesdale National Bank, earlier today.
Have you heard from customers since the collapse of Silicon Valley National Bank and Signature, and are they concerned?
So we have had a few inquiries from some of our customers, but most of it is just to, you know, talk to the Honesdale National Bank and make sure that just to validate their financial position and get a better understanding of what happened, and then also, of course, on FDIC insurance.
Yeah, and it's a good time to remind folks how FDIC insurance works. Most Americans are covered, right?
So the way that FDIC insurance works is it does go ahead and insure balances or deposits up to $250,000. But that's not really the only story. The coverage can really extend depending on how you have your accounts, the ownership of the account. So there are many options for customers to structure their accounts in a way that would extend that FDIC insurance coverage beyond $250,000. And the FDIC does have a calculator. We call it the EV calculator. It's the Electronic Deposit Insurance Estimator. And it's really a great resource for people to refer to if they want to check out different ways that they can have their accounts in order to extend that coverage.
And that's available at ed.fdic.gov. That's edie.fdic.gov. And if folks wanted to just make sure, they could either call the bank or could they check their statement?
So FDIC insurance would not be listed directly on their statements, but we're happy to discuss with any customer any questions, or any non-customer for that matter, really any questions they have regarding FDIC insurance. But I think the thing is to remember is really to know who you're doing business with, and that's going to be true no matter what type of activity you're talking about. So, you know, for the Honesdale National Bank, we've been around for over 186 years, so we've definitely seen our share of financial difficulties or economic environments, and really our posture here at the bank is just to make sure that we maintain a stable, conservative environment that really can weather most of these, you know, all of these really economic storms.
One way to look at it, I suppose, is that these failures are a good reminder to folks to be aware of where your money is and probably not to have it all in one place.
So again, I think it just goes back to knowing who you're doing business with. You know, we're a community bank that's very focused on our community. And so the strategies and the business operations that we deploy are very customer focused and community focused. And so I think it's really just knowing where your resources are at and what the financial structure is of the institutions you're investing with. And that's going to be true regardless of which financial assets you're talking about.
And when you hear headlines like this and hear the stories, people may harken back to 2008 when there was a big financial crisis. This is different than the financial crisis of 2008.
It is different than the financial crisis from 2008. But as I mentioned, I mean, the bank, you know, for us, we've been around since 1836. So we've definitely seen our share, even the Great Depression, of financial storms. And so really, you know, no financial institution, of course, is going to be completely immune to the economic impacts that we may see. But what's most important is really just the conservative nature and the stability of the financial position of the organizations to weather any type of storm that comes their way.
Anything else you want folks to know about what's going on right now and to assure folks?
I just think that as a community bank, you know, we are well capitalized. We are conservatively managed, and that has really been able to allow us to limit our risk exposure to situations like this. And, you know, again, we've been around since 1836, so that conservative nature has really seen us through many, many different economic cycles. And we just encourage people that do have questions to reach out to their financial institution.
Always good to hear from our local folks right there on Main Street. Kate Bryant, Chief Financial Officer of Honesdale National Bank, thank you so much for joining us and helping explain a little bit of this and help calm our nerves a little.
Absolutely.
And now, with no delay, for the latest on jobs and the economy around here, around the country, and his reaction to this news, it's time for Work Shift Live with James B. Huntington. Hello, James.
Good evening, Jason. Good evening, listeners. Working 9 to 5,
what a way to make a living. Well, there's been a lot that's happened since the last time that we talked. We wanted to start with this news and reactions to the banks. What? Why did two banks shut down? What does it mean for U.S. economy? And what even happened today that had stocks dropping, at least on the earlier part of the day?
Well, the big thing was with Silicon Valley Bank. What happened was last week, the rating agency Moody's called them and said, your bank is in bad financial health. Your bonds are close to being downgraded to junk. You need to raise cash. So the CEO told investors and others that they were going to have a $1.8 billion loss and had a quickly made plan to raise $2.25 billion in fresh capital that spooked the bank's depositors, New York Times' words, and investors so much on that on Thursday, the stock dropped 60%. People had pulled out about $40 billion of their money. By Friday, the bank was dead, and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, which insures bank deposits in this country up to $250,000, had taken over the bank. Since then, they've been trying to sell it. It was a similar story at New York Signature Bank. Now, on Saturday, Biden announced that everything would be covered at these banks, even over the $250,000. And there were a lot of deposits that were more than that. So nobody was going to be stiffed what they had deposited there in various forms. So we recovered that. A similar thing happened with Signature Bank of New York. FYI, there are other signature banks around the country which are unrelated and unaffected. Huh. So we have those things, and the effect we're going to have, oh, the additional one, yes. So we were getting some shudders through Credit Suisse, which is a strange place to show weakness. It's a 166-year-old classic Swiss bank that has been about as rock solid as any institution you could find. They are finding that the bank may run out of money, and they're withdrawing things, and they're dumping its stock. But the Swiss National Bank said that it would cover everything. So what we have here, the important thing to realize here, is that now we have really a de facto situation where our government is assuring deposits beyond what the FDIC and the FSLIC, which covers the same thing for savings and loans. So all of that is really going to be covered by the government. So if banks go down, it's just going to add to the deficit. So what it is, it's just more money onto the national debt, which is now $31.6 trillion and growing about $1 million every minute. So it's really just going into that bucket is what's happening. But we are more assured. We are seeing a lot of nervousness among investors and the banking system in general, but it's really not justified. Everyone's getting their money.
Okay. So it seems like you share the same take that I've heard from others in the news, and as we heard there from the Honesdale National Bank, that people don't need to be panicking at this time.
No, absolutely not. And a Honesdale Bank, unless it's a subsidiary of one of these ones I mentioned, really has no reason at all to cause any worry among depositors. So I'm with her on that.
I'm ready. I can hear you're ready to move on to some other stories, but before we go, is there anything else that we should be watching for in the news on these stories? Is there anything that you anticipate to happen?
Well, if we get more and more banks doing this, we may have even more of a problem. But again, I mean, the government has essentially said that it would cover these things. So it's not $250,000. It's unlimited.
All right. And, you know, since we spoke, there was another jobs report. What was in Friday's jobs report?
Yes, there was. It was headed with 311,000 net new non-farm payroll positions, half again the estimates that were out there. We had unemployment going up, actually, from 3.4 to 3.6%. But we can see what the cause of that was. We dropped 1 million people in our category of claiming no interest in work. I mean, anyone who thinks that that's a rock-solid determination by people who answer the survey saying they don't want to work, they're absolutely wrong. It went down. The job market is so strong that people joined, or people got out of this no interest in work category and went to work. And the job market only metabolized about 800,000 of them. That's a lot, but it did increase unemployment, and interestingly, it increased employment. We're now 1 million people higher, adding that 800,000 to the 300,000 new positions we get, over 1 million, and that's how many net new jobs increased. So everything else, most of the other numbers were all flat. That's the employment population ratio, still at 60.2%. We have the labor force participation ratio did go up a significant 0.1%, and other such things stayed much the same. The non-farm payroll earnings, the average ones, were only up 6 cents an hour, which is less than inflation, but last month's was 20-some cents, so adding the two together, we have pay raises coming in at just below the current inflation rates, which is perfectly normal and healthy. So overall, the jobs report, from their point of view, we are in excellent shape. We also have the American Job Shortage Number, or AJSN, saying that we can fill 16.5 million new positions of all we're going to be easy to get. That's an improvement also. So we're doing very well on the jobs report side. And again, there is not a scrap of substantive evidence from this that says we're heading for a recession.
But still, we have to prepare for it. That's what you hear. You hear people say,
it's always a possibility, folks. Nobody ever knows that a year out there will not be a recession, but there is no special reason for that now.
Mm. All right. Well, believe it or not, we have just less than 2 minutes left, but there are other topics we keep coming back to, include inflation. What was the inflation announcement that was made this week?
Yes, well, we're down from 6.4 to 6.0%. That's on an annual basis from a year ago and includes everything. That's getting down to the point where it's higher than what we've been used to the past several decades. But everyone talks about how prosperous it was in the 60s when inflation was about 5%. And remember the days when you could walk into an ordinary bank and open an account for 5.25% or 5.5% interest? We may be heading toward times sort of like that again, but they weren't terrible in the 60s, and it's not terrible now. And this was the 8th straight month where inflation went down from the previous indicator.
Okay, we have one more minute. Let's see if we can get one more in. AI is a big deal. We talk about it a liar, but maybe somebody wants to get on the AI train in terms of investing. Are there any good AI stocks, artificial intelligence?
Yes, there are. Now, the problem with this information is by the time it hits the press, it's already obsolete.
Uh-huh.
But I think if you want to buy into AI, and I sure don't blame you if you do, it's probably a very good idea if you want to do some trading. The best ones are the real meat and potatoes things right in the industry. We have Taiwan Semiconductor, we have Advantest, we have data center networking gear, Arista Networks. We also have the direct AI people of Microsoft, of course, Alphabet, which contains Google, and we also have Meta platforms and Apple and China's Baidu and all of these things you can buy stock in right now.
All right.
And if you want something in that area, I suggest you buy one of these big ones.
All right, James B. Huntington, Workshift Live. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, listeners.
Trailer Talk with Sabrina Hartel is up next.